books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio. For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Read On, the audiobook show in association with RNIB Talking Books. I'm your host Robert Kirkwood, and on today's show we'll be celebrating World Book Day. We've got two former Children's Laureates in Michael Morpurgo and Julia Donaldson. We've got very young Talking Book user and published author Betsy Griffin. Plus we'll find out what World Book Day books you can get free from RNIB. That's all to come on today's Read On. To celebrate World Book Day, RNIB ran a children's writing competition. The theme was adventure, and the judge for the final three was author Michael Morpurgo, who announced the winner during a special online event, which we hope to bring you in a future edition of Read On. But for now, let's hear from Michael Morpurgo himself during the first time I met him, just after the King's coronation at the Boswell Book Festival. Michael Morpurgo began writing stories in the early 70s in response to the children in his class at primary school where he taught in Kent. He's now one of the UK's best loved authors, was appointed the Children's Laureate in 2003 and has written over 130 books, including The Butterfly Lion, Kintsugi's Kingdom, Why the Whales Came, The Mozart Question, Shadow and Warhorse. Warhorse, which was adapted for a hugely successful stage production by the National Theatre and then in 2011 became a film directed by Steven Spielberg. The RNIB and commercial version of Warhorse is read by Luke Treadaway.
My earliest memories are a confusion of hilly fields and dark, damp stables and rats that scampered along the beams above my head. But I remember well enough the day of the horse sale. The terror of it stayed with me all my life. I was not yet 6 months old, a gangling, leggy colt who had never been further than a few feet from his mother. We were parted that day in the terrible hubbub of the auction ring, and I was never to see her again. She was a fine, working farm horse, getting on in years but with all the strength and stamina of an Irish draft horse quite evident in her fore and hindquarters. She was sold within minutes, and before I could follow her through the gate, she was whisked out of the ring and away. But somehow, I was more difficult to dispose of. Perhaps it was the wild look in my eye as I circled the ring in a desperate search for my mother, or perhaps it was that none of the farmers and gypsies there were looking for a spindly-looking, half-thoroughbred colt. But whatever the reason, they were a long time haggling over how little I was worth before I heard the hammer go down and I was driven out through the gates and into a pen outside. "Not bad for 3 guineas, is he? Hurry, my little firebrand, not bad at all." The voice was harsh and thick with drink, and it belonged quite evidently to my owner. I shall not call him my master, for only one man was ever my master. My owner had a rope in his hand and was clambering into the pen, followed by 3 or 4 of his red-faced friends. Each one carried a rope. They had taken off their hats and jackets and rolled up their sleeves, and they were all laughing as they came towards me. I had as yet been touched by no man, and backed away from them until I felt the bars of the pen behind me and could go no further. They seemed to lunge at me all at once, but they were slow and I managed to slip past them and into the middle of the pen where I turned to face them again. They had stopped laughing now. I screamed for my mother and heard her reply echoing in the far distance. It was towards that cry that I bolted, half charging, half jumping the rail so that I caught my off foreleg as I tried to clamber over and was stranded there. I was grabbed roughly by the mane and tail and felt a rope tighten around my neck before I was thrown to the ground and held there with a man sitting, it seemed, on every part of me. I struggled until I was weak, kicking out violently every time I felt them relax, but they were too many and too strong for me. I felt the halter slip over my head and tighten around my neck and face.
"So you're quite a fighter, are you?"
said my owner, tightening the rope and smiling through gritted teeth.
"I like a fighter, but I'll break you one way or the other."
Luke Treadaway reading Warhorse by Michael Morpurgo. I asked Michael what his impressions of the Boswell Book Festival were.
I have to start and be honest. I better be honest, didn't I? I don't think I've ever been to such a grand book festival in all my life, and I've been to many, many, many. This is a superlative in every way. I mean, we're looked after terribly well, which is important. And I know all this sounds very peripheral, but also you have an opportunity to meet other writers and talk and be a bit peaceful, and that's wonderful, and it's not usual at book festivals. Normally you meet them in a corridor, pass by and say, hello, nice to see you again, you know, see you at Hay, see you in Edinburgh. It's not like that here. There's a community of writers here at the moment, all of us different, I mean really different people in the different walks of literature. So that side of it's interesting. I haven't done an event yet, so I have no idea what the local populace is like. I will tell you afterwards. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm being interviewed by someone who has done the Edinburgh Book Festival a lot, and I know her, so that'll be grand. I'm looking forward to it very much.
Soon he had a new sister, and at last someone to play with at home, someone he could explore with, play hide-and-seek with. So he wasn't lonely anymore. Once he ran off down the corridor into the throne room and hid under one of the thrones. His sister soon gave up looking for him. But no one told him. The dogs found him, in the end, hours later, curled up fast asleep under the throne. His daddy said afterwards, it was the best thing you could do with a throne, go to sleep under it.
I've written this book, and I suspect it's the reason I'm here, which is the closest I've ever come to doing a biography, which is in fact not a biography at all. It's a fairy tale about our new king. And I think that's why I'm here, because I think this building has something to do with the new king. I'm a Stockholm, the new king. He's not that new anymore. So, yes, it's rather wonderful that this building is here, and I know what he's done to the building. I know what he's done to the grounds all around, and he's a man I admire very much. I was at his coronation the other day and with my wife and had one of those great days you're never going to forget. And here I am in a place which he's helped recreate and refresh and also engage young people with their own future and their own potential, which he's very keen on. So it's good that books are part of all this. So I'm contented to be here.
These were the happiest times, when the boy and his sister were together, playing games, running wild outside, picking blackberries, cleaning out the stables, looking after the horses, just having fun. Happiest times, best times. But then came the worst times.
A clip from The Boy Who Would Be King, written and read by Michael Morpurgle. As I said, we are from RNIB. Is it important that your books are available in accessible formats such as audio and braille?
I think it's one of the most important things. It's why I didn't hesitate when you said what you were doing here, because it seems to me that books should be important to us all, but they're seriously important to people who don't see or don't see very well. I have had such people in my family. I'm well aware of the difficulty that places people in, and I think books must be a wonderful way of being able to reach the outside world. So I'm well aware of how important the books are, in whatever form, whether they're read or they're on the paper. So, yeah, it's wonderful that you're doing it.
And you've narrated a few audiobooks, both commercially and for RNIB.
I have. I think it must be there somewhere in the sort of cellars somewhere in the RNIB centre, because I've done, I think, a few like that. But I think sometimes it's better to have a new voice, a different voice. Not necessarily an actor's voice, just a different voice, a different take on a story, gives it new life, you know. So, no, I'd always do it if I possibly could.
I've heard it's quite surreal when you hear your work read by someone else. I assume that must be multiplied by a factor of N when you see your work translated onto the screen. For instance, Warhorse.
It was hugely impressive, but I like it better when it's live. So I like theatre better, generally speaking, than film. That's, I suspect, because by and large I've been better treated by theatre makers than filmmakers. It's a moment, though, when you're rather nervous when you first walk into the cinema or the theatre, because you don't know what they've done to your creation of many, many years ago. The best adaptations shine new lights on it and make me think, well, why didn't you think of that earlier on? Because they've changed the story a bit, sometimes quite well. There is a negative. The negative is that sometimes when it doesn't work, it makes you rather disappointed because you've been looking forward to it and looking forward to it. But by and large, I like everything that people do with my stories because it extends it, you know, and it gives it new life. And new life means new readers and new people interested in the stories. And that leads to other things. It leads to the next theatre or the next film, or indeed the next reading. So I like to encourage it as much as possible. And in schools as well. I think it's very important the plays are put on in schools and people show the films in schools, and so that people realise that storytelling is not just on the page, it is other stuff. And it is quite legitimate to retell stories. It's not just legitimate, it's necessary, because sometimes stories run out of time in the sense that they can become very old-fashioned and not read anymore, and then it's wonderful if someone can pick a story up. I've just done a retelling, for instance, of Black Beauty myself, because no one reads Black Beauty anymore. The language is a bit strange, and it's set in a time which people, particularly children, don't understand. When there were no cars, there were horses. That's what, in a sense, the book's all about. And it's really good to do that. It's a very good training for a writer also, rather like an artist copying a great master. If you're copying a great storyteller, but telling it differently for a new generation, that prolongs the life of the book, and I'm all for that.
So does that retelling extend to things like the Roald Dahl books that have been given a bit of a modern makeover?
No, that's different altogether. The Dahl stuff is really because people might get offended by a certain word that he'd use, which is all nonsense as far as I'm concerned. Dahl is Dahl. He offends quite a lot in his stories, and if you take all that out of Dahl, I'm not sure what there'd be left. That's the first thing. The second thing is this, and young people, they'll understand this. That is that Dahl wrote in a certain time, you know? And it wasn't now, it was then. And it's good for kids to understand that then is not now, now is not then. And the world has changed, and that's fine. It doesn't mean that Dahl is a nasty man because he used a rude word or he talks, says things about teachers that they're not supposed to say. I think children rather like that. And I think it's a shame when people start judging things through that lens, you know? Roald Dahl is Roald Dahl. Leave him be. He's done an awful lot, more than almost any other figure I can think of, to spread the word of enjoyment of literature. And remember that when someone enjoys The Witches or whatever one of his books that they've enjoyed, it leads on to other great books. It won't be long, a couple of years down the line, they'll be reading Jane Austen, and then they'll be watching a Shakespeare play. And it can begin with a Roald Dahl book. And the minute you start messing around with it and sort of, I don't know, taming it somehow, making it something that it wasn't, that's a different thing altogether. I think, as far as I'm concerned, retelling is one thing. For instance, I've retold Beowulf. Well, you absolutely could not tell that story in its original language. It just wouldn't work. And all I'm saying is that once a book does run out of legs in terms of being able to be understood, not whether it's good for you or not. I mean, you think of Beowulf, there are more murders and bloodletting in Beowulf than you can possibly imagine. Really not good for children. Certainly not politically correct, but great stories. You know, the monsters are just simply wonderful. The heroism is amazing. And young people absolutely love it, but they can't read it in the original. And so it's good to retell it. I mean, I'm just about to publish later in the year The Tales of Shakespeare. Why? Because I want all children to be able and want to go to see a Shakespeare play. It's the right of every child in the English-speaking world, in fact, like all over the world, even if you don't speak English, to see a Shakespeare play. It's certainly the right of everyone on these islands to do it, and not enough children do. Well, why don't they? That's because it's been turned into a text for exams, and you're tested on it, and you're made to feel quite early on that actually Shakespeare's for clever people, and they're going to get their English GCSE, and they're going to do the A-levels. No. Shakespeare didn't write it then. He wrote it as a play. He was a theatre person. Go and see it in the theatre. Yeah, but I don't know what it's about. No. Then tell the stories, you know, what Shakespeare did, and he won't mind me saying it. I'll meet him one day, and I'll talk to him about it. He's done better with retellings than any other writer I can think of. He hardly wrote an original thing when it came to his plays. He pinched these plots from all over the place. But what did he do? He turned them into something that appealed unbelievably, not just in his time, but across the ages. And now, of course, we've forgotten what the original tales are altogether, and we know it through Shakespeare's eyes. I mean, hands up, those of you who know anything about Julius Caesar that's outside the play. No one. You know, it's Et tu, Brute. He never said at all that thing. He put it there. And that's what's wonderful about it. You can retell it and it doesn't spoil it. It adds to the whole thing and prolongs it. So I'm all for that. But leave Roald Dahl where he be.
Now, you've talked about encouraging children to read. Just finally, can we talk about your encouragement of children to experience wildlife or farm life?
Well, you should be interviewing my wife, who's sitting over there looking sheepishly at me now, encouraging me to say the right thing, because she set up this charity now 50 years ago when we were both young things, and because she loved the countryside when she was a little thing, and I did too. We both were lucky, middle-class children who had the opportunity when we were very young of walking the countryside, walking on the wild side, and she felt quite early on in her adult life, and I did too, we're both teachers, that it was the right, I talk a lot about rights, I know, it was the right of every child to be able to experience the countryside, wherever you lived and whatever your financial circumstances. So she decided, as a teacher, I decided as a teacher, that you can only learn so much inside the walls of a school, get the children out, get them into the countryside. And so 50 years ago, her daddy, who was a great publisher, a man called Alan Lane, who had been responsible for spreading great literature around by publishing 6p books, or sixpence books as it was in those days, she has something of that spirit. It's a Quaker spirit, I think, really, that everyone should have the best of all possible worlds, the opportunity of it. She had some money when her daddy died and put it where her mouth is, and we started this Farm Subsidy Children with a farm in Devon, where the children have been coming now all these years. So we've now had something like 100,000 children come to live and work on the farms for a week from primary schools, urban primary schools up and down the country, with their teachers, 35 at a time. But they don't just stare and look at the countryside, which might be good enough, but it isn't good enough. It's immersion I'm on about. Like when you read a book, you immerse yourself in it. When you see a play, you immerse yourself in it. And the countryside, for us, it's the same thing. It's about immersion, which means contributing. It means contributing to the countryside, to nature. Yes, during that time, it enables you to look at the world around you, to experience for the first time seeing a salmon jump in the river, seeing buzzards flying and mewing above you, seeing a lamb born. It enables you to contribute to the life of the farm. You help muck out, you pick up the eggs, you dig in the vegetable garden. It's everything, really, that you can do within the bounds of safety to contribute to a farm. And that's what the kids do. I joined her in this work because it needed two of us. And anyway, I had the same kind of enthusiasm for nature as she had. So that's been our work. It's my best story by far. I've never written a story that's just gone on and on and on, and I've never written a better story than that. And it still goes on. It's survived a foot and mouth, and it's survived the pandemic, just. And we're going on.
Well, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. Lovely to meet you.
You're listening to Read On, the audiobook show with Robert Kirkwood.
This is an RNIB talking book.
Murder Under the Sun, written by Agatha Christie.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Brazil by Michael Palin.
Every weekday at 2 p.m. or 10 p.m. enjoy a classic from the RNIB Talking Books Library.
Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte.
Plus, you can enjoy a book for the younger listener or young at heart every Saturday at 9 a.m. with a repeat on Sundays at 3 p.m. and Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll.
Anne of Green Gables by L.M. Montgomery.
Enjoy your favourite talking books on RNIB Connect Radio.
Books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio.
Still to come on today's show, we'll hear from Julia Donaldson. Plus, we'll hear about how you can get a free World Book Day book from RNIB. But first, here's Polina Kukurev with a very special author.
Joining us to share her love of reading and books is published author and creator of Betsy's Positive Videos YouTube channel, 10-year-old Betsy Griffin. It is lovely speaking with you today, Betsy.
Same.
Now, tell me, World Book Day, are you doing anything this year? I know last year you travelled all the way to Spain to talk about your love of reading, but this year, are you dressing up? Are you doing anything special?
I mean, our school loves reading. They try and make it as nice and fun and enjoyable as possible. So we always dress up at our school, so I will be going. I did want to go to Barcelona again, but honestly, it's just far too expensive these days. So unfortunately, we couldn't. But, you know, I can always do Zoom calls and things like that with these days, technology. And, you know, I really appreciate it. RNIB, you know, I love reading. I was reading loads in bed last night, one of your books that you very kindly prepared for me. So thank you very much.
Would you mind revealing what book it is that you're reading at the moment?
Good Night, Mr. Tom.
Oh, lovely. Is that your favourite book at the moment? Do you have a favourite book? There's so many.
Oh, so many. I don't know. I don't know. No, honestly, I have no idea. I love books, so very hard to choose.
Is that why you chose, because you did something super special in 2022, you actually published, you have written your first ever book. It's called Out of the Woods, A Tale of Positivity, Kindness and Courage. Why did you write the book?
Well, it was a collaboration with a lovely lady called Sue Belfrage. I wrote the book because I just thought it wouldn't just bring me so many amazing opportunities like this. I wanted to spread joy around the world and I wanted to teach people, you know, a very realistic journey. You know, might be similar to getting lost in the woods, and I want them to maybe after like a tough day at work or school be able to read a chapter of my book and be like, okay, that's a positive message I need to keep in my head and I need to have. And so many of the quotes in the book do come from my YouTube channel, Betsy's Positive Videos. Please like, share and subscribe.
I have to say, I love that both your book, both your channel, that you're always spreading positivity and happiness. But why is it that positivity is so important to you?
Well, I just think I've gone through quite a tough time. I'm blind and I got a brain tumour. So I'm a bit like, positivity is just like always had to be there and be like, come on, Betsy, you know it's tough, but just come on. Otherwise, because if you're not being positive, if you haven't got positive, and that's okay sometimes, but you know, don't always have a shadow looming over you and stopping that positivity coming your way, because positivity has helped me and I'm sure it can help you if you let it.
And I want to go back to your book again, because would you mind telling us what, just without spoilers, what is the simplest way to explain the story?
Okay, so I get lost in the woods. Ava and Faith, my two sisters in real life and in the book, are supposed to get help. I don't know if they do or not. It doesn't look like it. But I find these animals through the woods. I meet them and they give me a positive message and I find my way out of the woods throughout 7 to 8 chapters. There is also acknowledgements, a foreword, and I recommend the listening to the audiobook is read by Fern Cotton and me by parts.
Did you get a chance to meet Fern Cotton? Was it quite special?
I bumped into Fern Cotton. We both were invited by Princess Kate to Westminster Abbey at an event. And I saw her in the audience. I was like, oh my God, we never met before. So you actually met there, not on purpose.
And obviously you love reading, but what is it that drew you to writing?
Well, I just love writing because I just think it's good enough reading a book that's been written for you. But why don't you write the book? I love writing and then reading through it and editing, and I'm so bad for leaving out paragraphs. So I literally at the end of my work always have to go through and edit and add in like a, you know, skip a line or whatever for paragraphs. But I love writing because I'm in charge. I'm totally 100% in charge of how, where, you know, what the book's going to happen, where it's going to go. So that's what I love about it.
Yeah, I love it because if there's a book that you want to read and it doesn't exist, you could just write it yourself.
Yeah, yeah, like, ta-da! I can write so fast.
I have to actually ask, because I know you recorded a little bit of audio for the audiobook. You did a little special message. And my question is in regards to the special word that you have created. It sounds very positive, but what does it mean?
Spandandle. Well, spandandle is like a smoothie. And each little fruit is like a positive word. So happy, excited, amazing, joyful, you know, incredible. All of those words. And they're all mixed up to make the word spandandall. And if you'd like a spelling, it's S-P-A-N-D-A-N-D-A-L-L. I wanted to go for phonetic because people are always complaining about English spelling, including me. So I just wanted to go for phonetic so everyone's happy to spell spandandall.
Oh my goodness, I'm totally going to join in with you. So confusing sometimes.
Whoever just invented the dictionary is like crazy. They've just like slammed in so many weird words, you know, the spelling doesn't make sense. Like awkward, why is it A-W? That just doesn't make sense.
I know you enjoy reading in Braille. Does that help with your spelling, learning how to spell, or maybe just vocabulary in general?
I mean, just generally, I just love reading because it takes us away from our stressful, worrying world to just a world where, well, there might be some problems, but, you know, you always can guarantee that it's going to turn out okay in the end. And, well, life probably will. But, you know, it's just nice sometimes to take your mind away from reality to another world.
I think that's why we say we escape into a book, into a story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Betsy, what would you say to someone who is maybe like thinking of reading a book for World Book Day? Some words of encouragement, because I feel like sometimes it's hard to start a new book.
Yes, starting a new book, it feels like a mountain. And it feels like, imagine like Mount Everest in front of you and you need to climb that whole mountain and you're only at the bottom. And I felt like that when I started Goodnight Mr. Tom, but I actually ignored my feelings and I carried on reading. And now I love Goodnight Mr. Tom, and it was the other day and I read like 25 pages in like 2 hours. So definitely get from RNIB. I signed up to the RNIB library the other day and I'm already getting amazing service from it.
Amazing. Well, Betsy Griffin, published author of Out of the Woods and amazing creator on her YouTube channel, Betsy's Positive Video. Thank you so much for speaking on RNIB Connect Radio.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me. I've really had a lovely time.
And remember, as Betsy said, RNIB Library offers so many titles in accessible formats, and they have a lovely selection, including all of this year's World Book Day reads. So you can access them very simply, either sign up with RNIB Reading Services on their website, readingservices.rnib.org.uk, or if it's easier, call the RNIB helpline 0303-123-9999, and if email is your preference as well, helpline@rnab.org.uk.
For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
And on today's show, we are celebrating World Book Day. When an audio version of a children's book is made, sometimes problems arise, as part of the story is told purely through illustration. Here's how former children's laureate Julia Donson overcame that problem when she recorded Freddy and the Fairy. Julia Donaldson paid a visit to the Talking Book Studios to record for us her book Freddy and the Fairy, and I was with her every step of the way.
Hello, I'm Julia Donaldson, and I'm going to read Freddy and the Fairy. I just got here on the train, and after I had a piece of toast and a cup of tea for breakfast. Is that all right?
No, that's fine. That sounds awful nice, actually.
Freddy and the Fairy by Julia Donaldson. This book is produced by RNIB. Freddy found a fairy tangled in a tree. "Help! I'm stuck!" the fairy cried. So Freddy set her free. "Thank you!"
As with all talking books, especially children's books where characterisation is perhaps more important, there was debate over the characters' voices.
"Yeah, I'm quite pleased with that. The only thing I find a bit difficult is Freddy's voice. You know, I think I'm doing Freddy's voice. I mean, I don't want him to be too unpleasant. You know, he is a bit of a brat, quite, I suppose. You know, he's. Let me just think. I wish I had a pet. I'd rather have a dog. Oh, do you think something a bit more like that? Uh-huh. A little rather than, I wish I had.
Yeah, maybe that's
yes,
a bit deep.
A little bit, not quite so deep.
My name is Bessie Bell. I'll grant you all your wishes, though I can't hear very well. Freddy thought, then mumbled, I wish I had a pet. Why, so you shall, said Bessie Bell, and conjured up a net.
Freddy and the Fairy is being recorded for blind and partially sighted listeners, but the book itself is actually about hearing problems. Julia explains more.
It's actually a book about a deaf fairy. I'm a bit deaf myself. And I had this idea ages ago of a fairy just muddling up wishes. I thought that'd be quite funny. And a little boy wishing, say, for a dog and getting something totally different. Or what? Now, originally, I was going to have the fairy just mixing up different people's wishes. And then actually one of my sons said to me, "Mum, why don't you make the fairy deaf and then she could just mishear the wishes?" So when the fairy, when the boy wishes for a dog, he gets a frog. When he wishes for a cat, he gets a bat and so on. But the story's got a moral because it turns out that the little boy's mumbling and he's covering up his mouth. He's not looking at the fairy. And once he's learnt how to talk clearly, then all his wishes start to come true.
A problem arose as we got to the end of the book.
The very ending of the book shows, just in the pictures, that Freddy is wishing for a caterpillar, and the fairy, probably just mischievously by this stage, she gives him a gorilla and said she pretends she hasn't heard, and he gets a gorilla, and that's just quite a funny picture. But it's just shown in the book in thought bubbles. So I thought, well, how can I do this? How can I get this over with in a, just a purely audio version?
A number of solutions as to how to convey the ending were discussed, including an audio description of the pictures.
The only trouble with that for this book is because it's such a right... Well, yeah, in a way, it's the only instance.
It's just the one at the end.
And also because it's a rhyming... You know, I wouldn't want... You know, if it's not a rhyming book, then that'd be fine. Like, you do get books. I saw a book once... which is about an imaginary friend. And it says, you know, every time Jane went to the park, Mr. Monkey came too. And you just see, there's just a picture of Jane going to the park, you know. And then it says, you know, when Jane went to school, Mr. Monkey sat in the seat next to her, and you can't see. And you sort of realise that Mr. Monkey is... an imaginary friend. But if you couldn't see, you would imagine that Mr. Monkey was in the pictures, and you wouldn't, you know, so then you would need someone to explain. Though that would be the way to do it. Another voice just at the end said, hold on, and everything he wishes for comes true. I wish I had a caterpillar. Or very nearly. He's got a gorilla. So Freddy learnt the three gold rules, and now he speaks quite clearly, and everything he wishes for comes true. Oh, oh, meow, meow, oh, I wish I had a caterpillar. Or very nearly. Oh, no, I've got a gorilla. I don't know if that would work like that. And it, of course, you could just say at the end, in the pictures in the book, Freddy was wishing for a caterpillar. He ended up getting a gorilla. And I thought that, well, I just didn't think that would be that great. And so I actually sat down in this building, in the building with the recording studios, and I wrote an extra verse saying, you know, I can't remember off the heart, but I've written a special extra verse for this audio recording.
Now, Freddy... said the Fairy Queen. She sounded kind but stern. Before you wish again, there are three rules for you to learn. Rule one, you mustn't mumble. Rule two, don't turn away. The fairy needs to see your lips to read the words you say. Rule three, don't cover up your mouth. She can't see through your hand. Obey these three gold rules, and then I'm sure she'll understand. So, Freddy learnt the three gold rules, and now he speaks quite clearly, and everything he wishes for comes true, or very nearly. A dog, a cat, a bird, a mouse. What next? A caterpillar? The fairy laughed and conjured up a super-sized gorilla.
When we had finished recording all the audio for the book, Julia joined me for a chat and I asked her about the start of her writing career.
Well, and I don't know if you want me to go right back to when I was at school, because I just always loved writing, really, from the time I learnt
physically to write. And I do remember when I was at primary school, and I must have only been about five, and I wrote a story about a rabbit who was running away from a farmer and hid behind this shop counter, but his ears were poking up, and the farmer saw his ears and thought they were his ears, but the shopkeeper said, "Oh no, that's two carrots." And so even at the age of five, I was writing stories about trickster animals.
And I believe your first book, A Squash and a Squeeze, actually came from a song that was written for TV.
That's right, because, I wrote songs really for about 20 years before I wrote books. I used to write lots of songs for programmes like Play School, Play Days, Play Away. And A Squash and a Squeeze was a song I wrote based on an old Jewish folk tale. And it was done on television. And many years later, I got this phone call out of the blue from a publisher saying, could they use the words of that song as a picture book? So that's how I got started in books.
What sort of songs were you asked to write then?
All sorts of really strange things. I mean, they would phone me up. They always seemed to want two songs, you know, which was quite good fun, actually, because when you got as far as you could with one, you'd go over to the other and you'd be sort of juggling them around. So, like one time they said, could I write one song about silly slippers and another song about crumpling up bits of wrapping paper and throwing them into the bin? So I never turned anything down.
Now, with your picture books, how does the process work? Are you and, say, Axel Schaefer, who illustrated The Gruffalo, are you in the same room? Or are you?
No, not at all. I mean, he doesn't really even know whether I'm writing a new book, what it would be about. So I write completely on my own, and I don't even send the text to Axel. I'll send it to my editor, and she's the intermediary, she's the go-between. And then when Axel's doing the pictures, I'm not breathing down his neck either. You know, it's quite a separate process.
Do you ever get the illustrations back and think, that's not how I pictured him?
Well, of course, it's not going to be how you picture it. I think it's a bit like when you go on a holiday, you probably think, oh, Menorca's going to be like this, or, you know, Africa's, the safari park's going to be like that. And when you get there, it's never exactly as you've imagined it. But before long, you adjust to what you've actually got. So it's the same, really, with the illustrations.
Now, you're famous for your picture books, but you've also written books for older people, the Giants and the Joneses, and even older with Running on the Cracks. Will you ever write an adult novel?
If I did, I'd love to do something like Ruth Rendell. I really admire the crime writer Ruth Rendell, but especially her more psychological novels. I'd love to do something like that, but I don't really think I'm quite observant enough. A lot of my books are really quite fable-like, and it's difficult to explain, but anyway, it's very difficult to clear the decks as well. I just have such a busy life. That's my excuse anyway. It's so important for books to be available in audio. Children start off, before they can read, don't they? They start off hearing stories, hearing their parents telling stories. And I see audiobooks as being a wonderful continuation of that tradition. I was really shocked when I read that only a quite small percentage of the total number of books that there are available for blind people. And of course, when you want to write a book, you want everyone to get it. You're not trying to write for just the sighted section of the population. I think it's absolutely vital that people who are blind can get the stories.
Talking Books on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're listening to Read On, the audiobook show with Robert Kirkwood.
And we'll have the complete list of all the World Book Day books you can get free from RNIB after this.
Talking Books on RNIB Connect Radio.
My love of reading is very great, and the pleasure I have derived from books is very great.
Author, actor and creator of Downton Abbey, Julian Fellowes, on why he supports Talking Books.
This whole business of Talking Books matters to me. Reading is everything. You know, when you're blind, reading is travel. Reading is the last way that you can still enjoy certain things that are no longer realistic for a blind person to enjoy autonomously. It is an absolute lifeline, and we can help them keep that lifeline going.
For more information on the Talking Book service and how to support it, head to rnib.org.uk.
Big day today, Dad called to Holly the baker. Our little man Kobe's off to school.
Taking lots of mice into space isn't easy.
Here are some ideas to help you unlock the ultimate superpower.
World Book Day is a celebration of reading that takes place in March every year. And did you know you can get your very own book in audio or braille for free? RNIB are once again working with World Book Day to make accessible versions of this year's batch of 12 £1 books, which are suitable for all age groups, from those just starting to read and for those older independent readers. Here are the books for those beginning to read. First,
Dinosaur Club, On the Trail of a T-Rex. Jamie and Tess are members of Dinosaur Club, a network of kids who share dinosaur knowledge and talk about all things prehistoric. But Jamie and Tess have an extra special secret: they can actually travel back in time and go on adventures with real dinosaurs.
Let's hear from the author.
I'm Jane Clark, one of the team of writers known as Rex Stone. I want to tell you about On the Trail of the T-Rex, our £1 book for World Book Day 2024. You'll meet Jamie and Tess and travel back to dinosaur times with them, where you'll get to know their little dinosaur friend Wana and go on a Jurassic adventure tracking the most fearsome predator of all times. And we can't wait for you to join us on the hunt for the T-Rex.
Next,
High-Rise Hijinks. Crack the case with the investigators, Mango and Brash. It's up to the crime-fighting duo to save the day after a mysterious figure steals the bank. Do you mean someone robbed the bank? No, I mean they stole the whole building. Look.
Hi, I'm John Patrick Green. I'm the writer and illustrator of the Investigator series, and I'm excited that there's a new investigator story called High-Rise Hijinks for World Book Day 2024. In this adventure, Mango and Brash discover who stole the bank. Not robbed the bank, like the money's gone, but the whole building is gone. They stole the whole bank. So I hope you'll check it out this year. Thanks.
And finally, for those beginning to read,
Marv and the Ultimate Superpower by Alex Falase-Koya. In this World Book Day special, join Marv and his friends in 5 action-packed superhero adventures celebrating the ultimate superpower, kindness. When Marvin puts on his superhero suit, he becomes the unstoppable, invincible Marv, a superhero with infinite powers fueled by imagination. In these 5 mini-tales, there's plenty of trouble afoot and supervillains to defeat, from Professor Feather and the dreaded Duck of Doom to the Conjurer and her laser-blasting battleships.
I am Alex Falase-Koya, an author of Marv and the Ultimate Superpower, which is illustrated by Paula Post. It's a World Book Day book. Marv and the Blizzard Zone is another book in the Marv series. Marv is about a little boy who discovers a super suit in his granddad's attic, and the super suit is powered by kindness and imagination. And when he puts the suit on, it allows him to go head-to-head with the supervillains who are attempting to ruin the day.
Let's hear about the 3 books for early readers. First up,
Elma and the Patchwork Story by David McKee. It's almost bedtime in the jungle, and the baby elephants want to hear their favourite story. There's just one problem. Nobody can remember how it goes. Can any of Elma's friends remember? Or will they make up a brand new story together? A joyful celebration of sharing stories and making them up together, from the colourful world of Elma the Patchwork Elephant.
And here's what the author had to say.
One day I had the elephant, and I did the painting on the elephant. And there was Elma. and it's as if he just tells me things that he's been up to, and he says, did I ever tell you about the time when I said, no, what was that then, Elmer? Yeah. And he tells me, and then at the end he says, I think you better do a book about that.
Next.
Greg the Sausage Roll Lunchbox Superhero. Written and read by Mark and Roxanne Hoyle. One morning, Greg the Sausage Roll was chilling with all his friends in the bakery when the door swung open.
Oh, look!
Said Greg to Gloria.
Maybe we'll be picked to go on an adventure today. Oh, Greg, the littlest boy looks very worried.
Said Gloria.
I wonder what's wrong?
Big day today, Dad called to Holly the baker. Our little man Kobe's off to school. I'm Mark.
I'm Rox.
We're Lad Baby.
And we're super excited to announce that we have been chosen by World Book Day 2024 to bring out a brand new book.
Oh, yes. The book is called Greg the Sausage Roll, the Lunchbox Superhero. Greg and all his friends are heading to school for the very first time. But on their epic big day out, something happens and they're going to need to save the day. Will they be able to do it?
Ooh, we'll soon find out. Yes, ma'am!
And finally, for early readers,
Charlie McGrew and the Horse That He Drew by Rob Biddulph. Charlie McGrew longs for a clippity companion, but the sign says no pets. Can he draw one instead? Charlie McGrew is one creative kid, and when he decides he's going to draw a pet horse, he discovers he must also find ways to keep his new friend happy. Written in rhyming text and full of Rob's signature combination of comedy and charm, this imaginative story is perfect for all the family.
My name is Rob Biddulph, and I'm delighted to tell you that I have written and illustrated one of this year's World Book Day £1 books. My story is called Charlie McGrew and the Horse That He Drew. This is a Draw with Rob story, and I want to wish you all a very happy World Book Day.
Here are the four books for fluent readers. First up,
Can You Get Jellyfish in Space? Join Dr. Sheila Kanani as she discovers a weird and wonderful cast of animals who have travelled into space. From Ham the chimpanzee to Felicite the cat, and the 60,000 jellyfish who have orbited the Earth. In 1946, fruit flies were the first creatures to be sent into space. Where these intrepid explorers flew, other insects and animals, including humans, followed later. Fruit flies and humans actually share many genes. So what we learned from the space-travelling flies in the 1940s gave us clues about the effects that a zero-gravity space environment and radiation might have on humans.
Hi everyone, my name's Sheila and I'm the author of Can You Get Jellyfish in Space, which is our £1 book for World Book Day 2024. Inside the book, you'll learn about all the amazing things that have been taken into space, including a gorilla suit, some musical instruments, and maybe even jellyfish. Enjoy!
Next,
Walker Books Audio presents Loki, Tales of a Bad God, created for World Book Day 2024 by Louis Stoll, read by Ben Wilbond. Actually, it's by Loki, God of Asgard. Don't let that Stoll steal the credit, the fiend. Welcome to the glorious pages of my mortal diary. It is I, Loki, condemned to live in the form of a mortal child as punishment for my so-called crimes in Asgard. As an adult, I am very cool, with amazing hair. As a mortal child, I have slightly less cool, but still very cool hair. I am sure you have already heard of me, given how fabulous I am, but for any out there who have somehow missed the good news that is me, I shall catch you up.
I'm Louis Stoll. I'm a writer and illustrator, and I want to tell you about Loki, Tales of a Bad God, which is my £1 or €1.5 book for World Book Day 2024. My World Book Day book has three stories about the Norse god Loki. It's all part of my longer Loki, a Bad God's Guide series. In one of the stories, Loki finally tells us one of his Norse myth stories about the time that Thor nearly married a giant. Loki's task on Earth is to become a better person, and he's very, very bad at that.
Also for fluent readers,
Simon & Schuster presents Onyeka and the Secret Superhero by Tola Okoko, read by Nneka Okoye. This audiobook has been published in partnership with World Book Day, changing lives through a love of books and reading. Sand is lodged in my telekinetic hair. A long, thick, coily strand, the shade of midnight, drifts across my face, blocking my view of the crystal-clear sea stretching out before me. Its foamy waves lap against the soft white sand that cushions my feet, while the sun warms my skin. I can feel its heat, even with the tall palm trees looming above me. Their vibrant green fronds sway in the gentle breeze as they curve protectively round the coconuts clustered beneath them.
Hi, I'm Tola Okogu, author of the Onyeka series, and I'm so excited to tell you about Onyeka and the Secret Superhero, my action-packed one-pound book for World Book Day 2024. We join Onyeka and her super-powered friends on a new mission to help a remote village deep in the forests of southern Nigeria. But when they arrive, they find the village under the protection of a new and secret Solari who is determined to stop them.
And finally,
The Amazing Edie Eckhart, The Friend Mission by Rosie Jones. Edie Eckhart has a disability called cerebral palsy. It's the start of year 8 and there's a new girl in Edie's class from America. Edie can't wait to get to know Mia and her twin brother Benjamin. Mia has a hearing impairment and wears hearing aids. She seems shy and Edie knows how scary it can feel to join a new school. Maybe Edie can be the jam to Mia's jelly.
It's all about Edie Eckhart, an amazing 12-year-old girl with cerebral palsy.
Here are the two books for independent readers. First,
HarperCollins presents Dreadwood, Creepy Creations by Jennifer Killick, read by Marlo Chan Reeves. Welcome to Dreadwood High. If you've ever wanted to be chased around the grounds by evil maniacs in clown masks while parasitic worms chew on your brain, then this is the school for you. I grin and turn to Mr. Canton, our teacher, who is busy ticking things off a piece of paper attached to his trusty clipboard. How's that? Not sure that's the impression we want to give, Angelo, Mr. C says from deep in his list. Me, Colette, Hallie, Gus and Naira are sitting in student services, a huge room with comfy sofas and quiet corners, drinking hot chocolate from the vending machine. It's the best place in school besides the well-being pig yard and the silent trees in the Dreadwood, where I always feel happy, even with all the things that have happened there. My friends and I have found ourselves in student services a lot over the past year, being summoned for check-ins after the traumas and dramas of school life. And traumas and dramas at Dreadwood High are on another level from failing exams or getting caught scratching graffiti on the desks. This is a school like no other, or at least it has been for us, Club Loser.
I'm author Jennifer Killick, and I'm so excited to tell you about Creepy Creations, which is my title for the £1 World Book Day 2024 books. Creepy Creations is set in the same world that my recent horror comedy series is. It's about students Angelo, Hallie, Gustav, Naira and Colette. They're in school for an information evening. They find some forgotten laboratories that are full of some really horrific creatures. So if you like a scare and you like a laugh, Creepy Creations might be for you.
And also for independent readers,
The Doomsday Date by Farida Abike Imide. On the day before the world was meant to end, Sanjeet Joshi dyed his hair pink. He wasn't quite sure why.
Pink was never a colour he'd particularly liked, but it was on the doomsday bucket list he created weeks before. And he'd promised his past self that he'd complete every single weird task on the list, including dyeing his hair. So far, he'd already eaten sweets for breakfast, which he never usually did, smoked his first and last cigarette, which tasted like the Grim Reaper's sweat, by the way, and ridden his bike without wearing his helmet. He'd done 4 out of the 10 things on his list, and he was determined to do them all by midnight, even the last one. The one that scared him the most, the one he'd sworn he'd never do, unless it was a life-or-death situation. And, well, now apparently it was. The apocalypse was coming, or as some were calling it, the Y2K bug. When the clock ticked from 11:59pm on the 31st of December 1999 to 12am on the 1st of January 2000, computer systems were going to fail while planes fell from the sky. The world was going to explode and everyone was going to die. This was what Sanjeet believed, along with millions of others around the world. The Y2K bug would kill them all, and there was nothing he could do about it but live his last day to the fullest.
Hello, I'm Frida Abike-Imide, the author of Ace of Spades and Where Sleeping Girls Lie, and I'm so excited to tell you all about the book I wrote for World Book Day 2024. It's called The Doomsday Date, and it follows best friends Shola and Sanjeet as they navigate the end of the world together, spending what might be their last day on Earth, trying to complete Sanjeet's wacky bucket list, and possibly falling in love in the process.
There are dinosaurs, patchwork elephants, superheroes, jellyfish, and even a sausage roll. So call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 to order your free book. For the full list of books and to find out what else RNIB are doing this World Book Day, head to rnib.org.uk and search for World Book Day. That's all we've got time for on today's show, but remember, this show is also available as a podcast. There are over 300 episodes in your favourite podcast app. Just search for RNIB Read On. I'll be back at the same time next week. But remember, our daily show, Talking Books, featuring the best the RNIB library has to offer, that we're allowed to play on here. That's every day at 2pm or 10pm if you prefer a book at bedtime. The whole schedule is at rnib.org.uk/connect-radio.
Books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio.